Hello, and welcome to the Exonic Strategic Income Fund 2025 Year in Review and Portfolio Positioning Podcast. My name is Travis Prince, and today my colleague Robert Duggan will lead a conversation with Ben Bernstein and Stephen Drury, portfolio managers on our Exonic Strategic Income Fund. Today's recording date is January 14th, 2026. The Exonic Strategic Income Fund, ticker AXSIX, finished calendar year 2025 up 6.78% and had an annualized distribution rate of 6.46%. The fund has current AUM of $3.9 billion and remains a Morningstar 5-star rated fund. The fund has outperformed its benchmark, the Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index, by 540 basis points annualized over the trailing five-year period. The fund offers clients an alternative source of income, offering potentially higher yields than traditional fixed income through investments in non-agency residential mortgage-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, and asset-backed securities.
Welcome, everyone. This is Robert Duggan. I'm a managing director in the business development group at Exonic Capital, and I'll be your moderator today. I am joined by my two colleagues on the investment team, Ben Bernstein, who is a principal and portfolio manager of asset-backed securities and residential mortgage-backed securities. And additionally, I'm joined by Stephen Drury, who is a managing director and portfolio manager overseeing commercial mortgage-backed securities. In today's call, we will review 2025 performance. We'll talk about current portfolio positioning, and we'll discuss the opportunity set going forward for our markets. Ben, let's start out with you. If you could give us a quick review of the 2025 performance and maybe hit on, you know, if there were any surprises to the upside or downside in the portfolio or across different sectors.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks for the introduction. I'd say in ACXIX, we were pretty balanced in 2025, which we generally strive for. So when I say that, I mean market value per sector relative to the P&L generated was pretty consistent across the board. The one sector that generally stuck out a little bit was ABS, and that was as a result of aviation, which continued to get stronger because of market perception. You know, in 2020 during COVID, aviation took a hit because of COVID. In 2022, it took another hit because of rates and also because of the Ukraine-Russian war. But in 2023 and 2024, it was sluggishly getting better in terms of perception by the market. In 2025, that really picked up. And as these profiles approach their ARD, which essentially means the end of their investment, they continue to get better and they'll continue to cash flow. There was a little bit of cash flow this month. So all these things are positives in terms of that market. And I'd say that's what stuck out.
Great. So it sounds like everything was relatively within the realm of expectations, maybe a little bit more outsized performance coming from that aviation sector within ABS.
Yeah, exactly. And this is despite certain idiosyncratic headwinds, you know, sector by sector, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit. But despite that, it was pretty balanced.
Great. So I guess before we get into the current portfolio positioning, I'd like to hear from both of you. Just give kind of a quick overview of the opportunity set that you see for structured credit, kind of broadly speaking, across the different subsectors. We'll start with Ben.
So I think where you have to start here is with issuance numbers. If you compare issuance numbers between 2023 and 2025, you'll see that across structured products, it was about double. And specifically in RMBS and CMBS, issuance was about 3x what it was in 2023, with a total of about $335 billion issued. And we only see that number going up. So there will be a lot of opportunity, a lot of things to do. But with that supply, there's sort of been a floor on spreads. So spreads do look relatively attractive to something like corps, right? If you look at corporate bonds versus structured credit bonds from a ratings to ratings equivalent basis, you'll find that CMBS, RMBS have about 50 to 100 bips of pickup. And then, you know, you get the, what we always talk about, you get diversification, you get the defensiveness of these sectors. And so we still continue to like the space. In terms of specific opportunities, you know, I think we'll touch on that, all that a little bit later, but the current administration has really taken an aim at rates. So if we can get mortgage rates down, that's generally good for RMBS. And there are ways to take advantage of that.
Great. How about you, Stephen, on the CMBS side?
Sure. Thanks for the question. And, you know, coming into 2025, projections in the CMBS market were pretty optimistic that improving commercial real estate market conditions was going to lead to more issuance and greater investor demand. And outside of a short blip in March and April and May following Liberation Day, this largely held true. And we saw, like Ben said, record issuance that exceeded all estimates. For the CMBS market, our non-agency issuance was about $157 billion this year, which was up 40% year over year. And it actually was on top of the number reached in 2021, which was the post-financial crisis highs. Just in terms of what was issued, our market continues to demonstrate a preference for ASB paper, which is single asset, single borrower issuances, which accounted for about 60% of the annual total. And conduit and CRE CLO sectors were about 20% each. And as we're looking ahead into next year, issuance expectations are expected to grow about 10 to 15%. So that would put it in the $170 to $180 billion range. And, you know, we think, as Ben said, that presents a very attractive opportunity for us to continue to invest in the CMBS space. And we just came back from our annual industry conference in Miami called CREFC. And, you know, the tone was extremely constructive across really all participants, from banks to trading desks to investors to brokers, on the backdrop for commercial real estate going into this year. And so we think it's going to be a big year, both for commercial real estate assets and for CMBS bonds specifically. And so I would say we share that optimism, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later.
Great. That's a great overview, guys.
And just to chime in, you know, AXIX is the size of AXIX is such that with increased issuance, we can look at everything, and we have a whole lot to look at, but we can pick and choose the credits we like, the sectors we like, the trade within the trade.
That's a good point. Ben, you had mentioned the floor in spreads. That being said, we have seen spreads kind of across all, I guess, credit instruments over the last couple of years tighten, and overall yields are lower. What does that mean for the current yield in the AXIX portfolio? And what does that look like, I guess, on a go-forward basis from where we sit today?
So with rates going down over the last couple of years and with spreads compressing, there is less yield out there in all of credit markets and in all of bond markets. So you can either go down in credit and stretch there to grab yield, or you can stay put. I think for us, we're not going down in credit unless we're super comfortable, which in which case we probably already were. So I'd say that the yield will go down, but we're still going to be hunting for those opportunities that have good profiles with upside.
That being said, we still think the base case is 6% yield. That's 225 to 250 spread to the risk-free rate. That's still pretty attractive to us.
Great. In terms of, I guess, let's turn to Stephen and dig into the CMBS part of the portfolio, which has consistently been a core exposure for this fund since inception. I guess at the end of 2025, CMBS represented roughly 27% of NAV. And I guess, Stephen, before we get into the positioning, it might be helpful if you could just remind investors and listeners the different types of structures within CMBS, and perhaps, you know, where Exonic as a firm has historically focused within those different subsectors.
Yes, definitely. So to kind of recap the three major asset classes within CMBS, conduit refers to pools of 5 or 10 year fixed rate loans. They're diversified in terms of both property type and geography. ASB, the single asset, single borrower that I mentioned earlier, those can be either fixed or floating rate transactions, and they can be secured by either a single property, like an office building or a resort hotel, or it could be a portfolio of properties that are owned by a single sponsor, typically of the same type, but they often offer diversification in terms of markets. And then CRE CLOs are pools of floating rate loans that are generally have some degree of transition to them, while the other two property types, SASB and Conduit, are all stabilized. In terms of our activity for in 2025 and continuing into next year, you know, we believe that commercial real estate fundamentals are healthy and that CMBS really offers a way to pick up attractive yields that are secured by really high quality commercial real estate assets, and where you're able to invest, you know, are really solid leverage points. And we believe that, you know, the best way to express that view is through the SASB market. So that makes up the majority of our CMBS positions. We focus really heavily on SASB for a few reasons. I think first and foremost, we have a deep credit background here and a very granular approach to underwriting commercial real estate. And so we believe that that approach best lends itself to SASB, where we can identify deals that we like, underwrite them thoroughly, and then decide which points in the capital stack offer the best relative value. We also prefer SASB deals because they have greater liquidity and usually higher levels of credit enhancement relative to Conduit. What we like right now, because issuance has been so robust and there's been pretty limited spread volatility this year, we've thought that the single A and triple B portion of the capital stack in SASB has really offered the best relative value. There you're achieving spreads in the mid to high 200 spread context, and you're still at very conservative underwritten loan to value ratios, which are typically in the 50 to 60% range at that part of the stack. Or, you know, said another way, that means that the underlying assets could decline in value by about 40 to 50% before the bonds would be at risk of absorbing principal losses or being impaired. And we believe that's a lot of cushion to absorb, particularly at a time when the backdrop for commercial real estate is pretty healthy.
Absolutely.
And then just to, you know, in addition to the new issue market, we're also active in the secondary market, both to source new positions, but also to monetize gains or rotate into where we see better relative value as spreads compress. And I believe, kind of alluding to what Ben said earlier, rather than reach on credit, we believe that taking some of those gains via trading in secondary is an attractive way to enhance returns when yields are coming down across the board.
Great. I guess in terms of, you know, the SASB market, where it allows us to be more granular, as you said, and really focus on property types, borrowers, can you talk about some of the underlying themes that we're currently exposed to in this portfolio?
Yes. So, like I said, almost all of our CMBS exposure is in SASB, but within that, we have positions in every major asset class. And so that does allow us to remain diversified. Our top concentrations are in the hospitality and multifamily space, but then followed by office, industrial, and retail. In the hospitality sector, I would say overall, we saw fundamentals marginally soften in 2025, but they remain very healthy. And the themes within our portfolio is, you know, it's really barbelled between the luxury and upper upscale segments and then the extended stay segments. And we have very little exposure to limited service properties. We like each of these segments for different reasons. So on the higher end side, revenue per room growth rates continue to outperform relative to lower end segments as the high-end consumers are continuing to travel and spend. And many of the properties that we're seeing in the new issue market have benefited in the last few years from a lot of investment from their sponsorship to upgrade the food and beverage offerings in the rooms and make sure that those properties continue to compete in their segment going forward. And so we've gotten very comfortable with those kind of top assets. And then on the extended stay side, we think that the demand there is a lot more durable and view those as more defensive and resilient, and if there is any kind of economic downturn. just because the nature of the longer length of stay for those customers, and they're a little bit less expense intensive than the other segments. And so while we do think that expenses for hotel properties will continue to rise over the next few years, I think, you know, there's a lot of room in the segments where we invest to withstand any deterioration in cash flow before these bonds would be at risk of taking loss. Then in the multifamily space, our other big thematic investment, which we've, has been the case for several years, we think this is going to be a good year for the multifamily market as we see some of the supply pressure from new properties being delivered over the last few years begin to ease, particularly in markets like the Sun Belt. And I think that, you know, as that supply eases, we think it's going to continue to be constructive for multifamily performance, maybe seeing some, you know, the return of rent growth in some of these markets. And we think as the broad economy remains solid, that demand will still be healthy. So we expect to continue to invest actively in multifamily.
Great. How about the office sector, where that's obviously been in the news? There's, you know, been some problematic issues in that sector over the last couple of years, but it sounds like there's been a decent amount of issuance in that sector. And is that something that we're currently looking at? And what types of deals, you know, are currently getting done in that subsector?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. The sentiment from investors toward office properties continued to improve throughout 2025. And in fact, office represented the largest component of the new issue market at about 26% of SASB issuance. And so, yeah, and we currently see the top office assets trading at the tightest levels of all SASB in the market. I think what we're really seeing now is investors are beginning to get back to the sentiment toward office as it was in the early days of CMBS, where it's an attractive asset class to have in your portfolio because you're backed by long-term leases to credit tenants, which extend well beyond the loan term. So that offers really predictable cash flows throughout the life of the bond, which is what we want as investors. I would say all that said, office remains very bifurcated. So there's a lot of dispersion, both market to market, between places like New York and Miami that are really seeing strong performance, seeing rent gains, declining vacancy rates. And then there's others such as Chicago, Seattle, Denver that are continuing to be soft. And then there's also a huge bifurcation between the A+ high amenity assets and older B or C office stock, which have not seen the same benefit as the higher end segment. So we expect that's going to continue to be the case in 2026. There is, you know, the older deals in the CMBS market that were done at very low interest rates and some older assets that are not as high amenity, I think we'll continue to see those default and go into the special servicing pipeline. But I think those are going to be largely viewed as more one-off or property-specific issues rather than representative of the broader market, particularly on the high end, which is doing very well. So in terms of our activity in the office sector, it's relatively low at about 10% of our CMBS portfolio and about 3% of the overall fund portfolio. But we did add some exposure this year, mostly through the new issue market. These are deals we believe to be best-in-class assets in their respective markets, and I think we'll continue to do so very selectively in 2026. And, you know, in the due diligence process, we're able to leverage our extensive coverage of the sector, both from our internal commercial real estate teams, who are in those markets looking at properties every day, but also, you know, through our extensive broker and sponsor network, to, you know, as we complete our due diligence, to make sure we're comfortable, you know, with the valuations that we're investing in.
Yep. Thank you. Let's turn back to Ben and discuss the residential related assets. So RMBS, which includes both the non-agency sector as well as our residential transitional lending or RTL exposure, currently is about 46% of NAV at year end. So Ben, I guess, kind of similar to what we did with Steven on the CMBS side, can you talk about the current positioning within the RMBS portfolio?
Sure. In the beginning of 2025, I'd say we were evenly split between regular RMBS and RTL, residential transition loan bonds. That has shifted to be more balanced amongst other sectors within regular RMBS, and I'll get to that in a second. We haven't been selling RTL. We've been letting it naturally roll down. So RTL, if you recall, are short-term loans to home builders or home renovators. So the bonds end up being relatively short investments. What's been happening is that a lot of the deals have been getting called, which we expected, but it's a healthy sign for a relatively young or younger segment of the market. If you go back to our last podcast or what we've been saying all along is that we've been involved in the RTL market for a really long time. Our hedge funds started investing in the underlying loans pre-COVID, as well as equity pieces and securitizations. The securitizations were, when they started, all unrated. A few years ago, they became rated. So you have rated RTL, you have unrated RTL, you have RTL loans. We've been involved in the market pretty much across the board in various places within Exonic. But when the deals became rated, they tightened in, right? And so issuers are more incentivized to get deals rated because they get a cheaper cost of financing. So we were still involved, and we were still involved in the unrated sector. We still liked it from a credit standpoint. As the market sort of caught on to that or caught up to us, we've let it roll over and we've let it pay down, and we've reinvested those funds elsewhere. Not because of a credit concern, just because of relative value.
Right.
In the beginning of 2025, we were mostly, you know, other than RTL, in non-QM and legacy RMBS. The legacy RMBS portfolio continues to amortize down just because these are mortgages that were created before 2008. And so that market just gets smaller. We've reinvested some of the RTL paydowns into other sectors within RMBS, like bonds backed by non-performing loans, where you're really looking at low LTVs and so high recovery rates that are going to pay down your bonds. We've been looking at prime jumbo, which is bigger loans that don't get sold into the GSEs. And they're prime because they're the best borrowers. The loans are a little bit bigger. They perform really well. And into non-QM, both discount non-QM and new issue non-QM, generally senior bonds. And so especially with the prime jumbo and the non-QM bonds, they have a lot of upside to higher prepayments. And so if we see mortgage rate, like I alluded to before, if we see mortgage rates go down, you can really see a pop in some of those investments. So I just say we're a little bit more balanced now than we were. We still do own roughly 10% of RTL. So we still like the sector, but it's been more of a balancing out.
Yep. And when you look across the different sectors, whether it's non-QM, non-performing loans, RTLs, where are you seeing spreads and yields in the part of the capital structure that we're investing in?
So as of last week, spreads on AAAs were about 125 to 135 over the risk-free rate. So that's probably high 4% yields. Triple Bs, so still investment grade, were 225. That's about 6% yield, give or take, with, you know, the upside to rates that we were talking about. You get a little bit more yield if you get into something that's unrated, where we still like the credit, or a little bit of a more off the run sector, again, where we make sure we like the credit.
I guess in terms of housing, do we have a house view in terms of what to expect going forward? And how do you think that impacts our exposures in this portfolio?
Yes, we generally agree with the street where we think house prices stay somewhat flat from here. If you go back in time in 2023, house prices went up 4.8%. In 2024, they went up 3.5%. Last year, they went up 1.3%. So you can see the trend is that they've still gone up, but not as much. And that's okay, right? The investments that we hold in Axix aren't necessarily levered or require house prices to go up. They just require house prices not to crater. And so I think this is evidence that the housing market is pretty stable and supported. I do think house prices probably move sideways. That's what the Fed wants, right? Like inflation, house prices are a big part of inflation. And when they stay somewhat subdued, real house prices, so house prices relative to inflation, actually go down. And theoretically, houses become more affordable.
Yeah. But so modest movements up or down in terms of home price nationally, that shouldn't have a much of an impact in our portfolio, correct?
Right, exactly. You've seen inventory go up from all-time lows post-COVID and since 2022, just continuously go up, and they're approaching 2019 levels. So the thinking is if inventory levels continue to go up, albeit with all-time low demand, then you could get negative nominal house prices. Again, no one is expecting them to be down 10% or anything like that. What can make them go up is if you do get increased demand.
Yeah.
And so, like I said before, the Trump administration is clearly taking an aim at mortgage rates. So if they're successful in getting mortgage rates down, that'll spark demand, which will increase house prices and will lower or at least stunt that increase in inventory. So I'd say our house view is that we're probably sideways, leaning towards up a little bit, but certainly not down a lot.
Great. And I guess in terms of interest rates, we can't have an update call if we don't talk about interest rates. I know it's everyone's favorite topic. Can you guys, I guess both of you, kind of hit on how rates, given our view, well, first off, what is our view? And secondarily, where you see that or how you see that impacting our portfolio?
Our view is range bound. We're in a low higher, low fire environment, with the caveat that if the labor market falls apart, then you can get rates to go down. But if you look at the difference between the terminal rate, which is generally the two-year rate, and the Fed funds target rate, there's only about a 60 bips difference, which means that the market's not really expecting rates to come down all that much, which kind of means that recession is not the topic on everyone's minds, as it sort of has been at times over the last couple of years. But at the same time, we're still in a restrictive environment where rates are relatively high. And so you're probably going to get inflation that continues to be subdued, unless the administration, follows through with some of the programs and influences that it wants to, then you could get inflation spark up again.
Okay.
And then maybe that's where you get an increase in rates. But we think that will probably be range bound.
Anything to add, Stephen, on how it impacts commercial real estate?
Yeah, for CMBS and commercial real estate, I think a lower and stable interest rate environment is positive for both the assets and the bond side of the equation. So for the underlying assets, I think stable interest rates leads to better performance. And I think that will lead to more capital markets activity, both maybe seeing an uptick in transaction volume and continued strong issuance of new deals for us to look at. And then on the bond side, I think as rates stay here or even move lower, I think that likely leads to a flatter credit curve, particularly in credit. So for the stuff we own, I think, it will certainly benefit in the form of potentially tighter spreads. But as we spoke about earlier, I think it's going to be, we'll also be investing in a lower yield environment going forward.
Yeah. So Ben, you alluded to some of the administration's plans to lower mortgage rates. And in the last week, we got news of Fannie and Freddie buying $200 billion of mortgage bonds. What do you see the impact of that? And is that a positive, a negative?
I think it's a positive on a few different levels. The first order effect being you get lower mortgage rates. We've seen the spread between the risk-free rate and mortgages come down, which will ultimately lead to lower mortgage rates, which means, as I alluded to before, demand up, housing up, potentially prepays up. Mm-hmm. So any bonds that we own at a discount, if there's more prepayments, that means there's more principal coming in. And if you own a bond at 80 and it gets paid par, that's P&L. So that's good. The second order effect, which we're also seeing, is that if you owned or were an investor in agency mortgages because you like the relative spread there, now the GSEs are going to come in and buy $200 billion, potentially more. That tighten the spreads. That's going to move you somewhere else. Where are you going to go? Maybe non-agency RMBS. And yep. So that'll tighten up spreads. And so it sort of has a fundamental impact, which is positive, and a technical impact, which is positive. Yep.
And to be clear, our portfolio, we own no agency residential mortgage-backed bonds.
That's correct. We own no agency mortgage-backed.
Yep. Let's, I guess, now turn to asset-backed securities, or ABS. That's currently, I guess, at year end was right around 10% of NAV, which is down over the year. So I guess, Ben, you want to first talk about, you know, some of the shifts or changes that have occurred in that portfolio, and then we can get into some of the current themes in the book.
So we've had our eye on the consumer for a while. The last year, a couple of years. There's been stress in consumer land, especially in the subprime cohort. We own very little to no subprime auto, but we've definitely been watching it. So what have we been doing? We've been sticking to pretty short investments that are high in the stack. And those have been paying off, similar to what I said to RTL. You know, if they're short investments, that means that you're constantly getting paid in terms of principal pay downs. And so you can either take those and reinvest them, or you can invest them elsewhere. I think part of the increase in RMBS you've seen has been from the decrease in ABS.
Yep. In terms of any certain underlying themes within that part of the portfolio, you know, whether you mentioned no subprime, but, you know, are there other areas you're currently looking at or have added exposure to?
Well, I want to reiterate the aviation trade, which has done well. It's not only been market perception, but some of these trusts that got knocked off course are actually almost back on course, which means that the subordinate bonds are going to start cash flowing again. And that's only good for, you know, every part of the stack, which also leads to the likelihood that they do get wrapped up. We think that's a theme that's going to play out in 2026 as well.
Okay, great. And then obviously there were some fireworks in the ABS sector in the second half of last year around Tricolor. Thankfully, you know, and due to our team's due diligence, we've had no exposure there. But, you know, is that something you can comment on and maybe talk about whether you think that is a broader issue and a trend, or is it just a one-off in your opinion?
Yeah, so our ABS trader actually met with the management, heard their story, and frankly, he didn't like what he was hearing, so we decided not to get involved. You know, they lend to a very specific borrower, which is undocumented immigrants down in Texas and thereabouts. And we didn't want to get involved there. They had a story on recovery values, which we didn't buy. And so we just wholesale, you know, stayed away from that.
Right.
Do I think it's a one-off? I mean, not strictly speaking, because there was First Brands. I think there were a few others. So no, not necessarily a one-off, but I don't think it's a widespread issue.
I guess in terms of something you could both hit on here, one of the, you know, big areas of growth recently has been in the data center sector. And from what we've seen, that's been issued in, you know, I guess you could see it in ABS format. You can see it in CMBS format. We've seen it in corporate format. So can you two hit on what we're doing in that sector? Do we see opportunity? You know, is the growth expected to be, you know, what we've seen going forward? Let's start with Steve.
Sure. So I would say yes to all of those questions. I think, you know, and just returning from the conference, like I said, I think data center was one of the consistent talking points among both issuers and investors. For the CMBS market specifically, we saw about $11 billion of data center issuance in 2025. And we think this is going to massively grow further across CMBS, ABS, and corporates in 2026, just to support the rapid pace of growth and investment in that sector. Over the course of the year, we saw some initial jitters in the market, which happened to coincide around March and April with Liberation Day, when we saw the headlines about DeepSeek come out right around the same time while a large deal was in the market. But since that time, that has largely subsided and the sector's recovered a lot since, both in terms of spread and issuance. And we saw a $3 billion portfolio transaction get priced in November. So I would say our market is healthy for data center issuance. In terms of our role in the data center space, we've really continued to educate ourselves over the course of the year on the different formats, both by sector that they're being issued and the different types of data center exposure you can get, whether it be hyperscale or colocation or enterprise, and the different ways that you can play the sector. We started to participate in our first deal on the CMBS side in small size this year. And the way that we've favored expressing that view is really in deals that are diversified, both in terms of location. So these are assets located in the top data center markets in the country. And they're also diversified by tenancy and the use cases. So we thought that was a good way to not be overly exposed to any one particular tenant or only, let's say, have exposure to AI training facilities, for example, in case any one particular pocket gets overheated. I think going into next year, we'll continue to follow the sector as it evolves and evaluate the deals as they come.
Yeah, it's a growing sector, right? And there's different ways that you can get involved, like Steve touched on, whether that be through CMBS, through ABS, through corporate bonds. So we're expertizing ourselves on the sector in general, and we're going to pick the best way to express our views.
Great. Super helpful. Well, I guess it's time to wrap up. So I'm going to give each of you an opportunity to quickly summarize anything you'd like in terms of the opportunity set, the outlook, or performance expectations going forward for your sectors in the fund. Start with Ben.
It's been quite the ride since 2020. I don't expect it to slow down. I view that as a good thing. There's going to be plenty of opportunity. It's going to be plenty to talk about, and I hope we can do this podcast again.
I think this year, and you know, looking ahead to 2026, I think with the pace of issuance and the tone from our market, it's going to be a great opportunity to invest in really high quality commercial real estate debt and at levels that I think are really attractive. And so I expect over this next year, we're going to remain very busy and very actively investing. I think the one thing I would say is that during periods where the market is this bullish and there's such strong demand and such low volatility, I think it inevitably you see instances where credit quality or underwriting standards start to loosen a little bit. And so I think this year, as much as ever, it's just important to remain disciplined in our credit selection with a focus on sponsorship and cash flow and liquidity. And I think that should outperform in really all scenarios.
Great. Well, I appreciate both of your time and I look forward to hopefully doing this again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund carefully before investing. To obtain an electronic copy of the prospectus, please visit www.axonicfunds.com.